Snowball Spa. You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Calc with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP.
Good Thursday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. We're going to get into all kinds of different topics. The All Big 12 teams were released ahead of next week's media days. Interesting. When you consider a couple of different schools and how many they had. Have you actually seen this team yet?
Highlights of it. I haven't seen all of it. But I did receive some text messages about it.
Well, you know, that's I know OU fans are going to be butthurt about what happened, that only their punter is on the first team.
Right.
That's fine. Tell me somebody that should be by the results on the field in their career. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I get Marvin Mims. Okay, he caught 32 balls last year. Everybody thinks he's good. Everybody's seen him be pretty good at times. But when you compare him to the other three that actually made it, it's pretty amazing. But I think there are some guys that'll end up on the postseason team that maybe weren't there in preseason. We can talk about those.
Which happens every year.
That's right. You know, the all Big 12 quarterback with Spencer Sanders. Will he be the postseason one? I think he's the obvious choice preseason because he's the only guy that's really had much success at the quarterback spot that's returning in the entire Big 12. But will he be there when the season's over? Also, how many guys from OU and OSU will be on the one that counts? Because here's the deal. Nobody cares about this one. You know who the newcomer of the year preseason last year was?
No. Wait. Eric Gray.
Eric Gray.
Yeah.
Turns out he wasn't the postseason newcomer of the year. So we can talk about that. Baker Mayfield, the long saga is over. So how did we get here and what are actually the deal? What is the deal? Was he a failure in Cleveland, considering where he was drafted? Do we think it's his job automatically in Carolina, or will he have to battle Sam Darnold? What's the best way for him to succeed in this league, and then what does Cleveland do? Talk about that. Did we see the Chet Express get derailed a little bit last night? Would we call it that? Thunder won easily. I can tell you one thing. Josh Giddey's the best player in summer league so far for anybody, which is nice. And he's only 19, so that's good things for the Thunder. And then the OK Kids Baseball Regional. Some of them started yesterday. We'll tell you what's on tap for today. That's what we got on our minds. Feel free to chime in with whatever else is on yours. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. 225-9698. Give us a call, shoot us a text. We can talk about any of those things. Whatever else might be on your mind, feel free to chime in at 225-9698. Going to be outside the listening area. A couple ways to stay in touch with the show. Log on to KADSAM.com or download the Paragon Communications app. You're already laughing. The app has all things Paragon.
Remember what we talked about right before we went to air? Yes. Really sent a video.
Oh, no.
Involves a toe.
A toenail getting ripped off. Gross. So glad I'm not friends with him.
I think he's proud of it. I think he's proud of this.
Look at this, guys.
How tough he is.
Here comes my toe. Now, here's the thing, though. You couldn't hear it. You couldn't hear the audio, right?
I'm not turning it on because he might be saying some words as it's happening. I'm sure there's some local anesthetics going on, but not something I care to see. Someone's toe getting pulled off.
What if he's just crying? What if he's just whining like a little baby?
Not this guy. I don't think he.
You don't think so?
He's a tough farmer. I don't think he'd cry. I just can't believe it. I'm shocked he actually sent a video.
I mean,
it's this group text that has a couple of women in it. You know they don't want to see that.
Who knows? Some of them might. You never know. I don't want to see somebody get their toenail ripped off. That's for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Three radio stations.
That went south in a hurry.
Where was I at? Penny News. Brand new edition of the Penny News is in the website. Hit the website last night at midnight or Tuesday night at midnight. Start picking up a free copy of the Penny News right now. It's everywhere. On your free, on your local newsstand, check out the deals in this week's Penny News. Big Elk TV and Paragon TV are also in the app. Watch us live. Live streaming of high school sports. Are you going to throw up?
It was a hiccup.
Oh, okay, I was afraid looking at the video.
No, it was a hiccup. Breakfast. Just hiccup. I'm sorry. No.
I was like, whoa, Jared going down.
You don't know if I'm throwing up.
Also, Skinny on Sports Podcasts. KADSAM.com and iTunes. If you want to check out the show, if you missed it entirely, you can go back and find it there. Hello, Jared.
You had a fun night.
Oh, I don't know if fun is the right word to describe that.
Stressful.
You know, it was just, you watched. And so, yeah, the OK Kids Baseball Regional Tournament, as far as the Western Oklahoma teams, I think just that 10U tournament in Weatherford is all that was yesterday. Then everybody starts in full force today. I love the technological advances that we've all made, you know. But I can tell you one thing. You know what's not really all that much fun?
What's that?
Watching Game Changer. Yeah. When it's a one-run game and your kid is on the mound in a one-run game.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Yeah, so yesterday afternoon.
You're yelling at it, update. Yeah, that's what update.
I told Johnny Phillips yesterday when I got to Weatherford. I was like, I know you couldn't do anything because, you know, you can just report the results as they happen. But there was a couple times where I was afraid you weren't watching the game because it took too long to update.
Yeah, it happens sometimes.
So the Sarah Eagles
won. Tell somebody to throw up a camera.
Well, listen, I don't.
I guess. Just saying.
That could happen.
Yeah.
I don't want it to be mine, though. So I'd be afraid the ball, the first time I'd do it, the ball would smack into it and break everything on a foul tip.
Let me ask you something. Do they have a chain link?
No.
It's all netting?
Mm-hmm. It's net. I think, isn't it?
I don't know. It's been ages since I've been on the baseball fields over at their complex.
It may be. Actually, it may be chain link.
I'll get with you later. I might have something that
can't remember a lesson
could be used for you.
We'll just do it how we're doing it.
Okay.
No need to change anything right now. A little superstition kicking in.
Oh,
but anyway,
okay.
So 1-0. Sarah beat Clinton in the yesterday afternoon's game. The Merritt Drillers lived up to their name. In that first game against Woodward, 15-2 or 15-3. I think it was 15-3, the Merritt one, in that Sarah game. I'm asking for a friend whose kid this is, but one of the kids, Wyatt Compton, he threw a one-hit shutout, struck out 12 of 15, and, oh, by the way, had the RBI single to score the run.
Man.
Anybody know whose kid that is?
That would be Kara's kid.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's my wife's son.
Awesome.
He was like, yeah, that was pretty cool. I mean, you know, then Merritt Weatherford game, I got to watch that one. Basically, the entire thing. Back and forth, Weatherford scored 3 in the second, bottom of the second, I think it was. Merritt came back with 2 in the top of the third and really should have been 3. Had a runner on third and nobody out. He had a pretty deep fly ball to center field, and the runner wasn't quite on it as far as getting still standing off the bag when the ball was caught, so he had to kind of scamper back a couple steps and then take off. And credit to the Weatherford center fielder, man, he hosed it right in there to the pitcher's mound, a good relay, and Weatherford chopped that run down at home to stay up 3-2, and then they end up scoring 3 runs, I think, in the next inning, 6-2. That ended up being the final, maybe 6-3 was the final there that Weatherford beat Merritt, and then Sarah played Arapahoe, and man, the Arapahoe Indians jumped all over the little guys. 5-0 at the end of the after the top of the first inning. They started out with a hit. Dax Cutt had a 2-run double, and then some walks and some wild pitches. And next thing you know, it was 5-0 with Cutt on the mound. And I'm thinking, this is not good. Credit to our guys, got down 8-0. After the top of the second, and just kind of fought their way back. Scored 2 runs in the bottom of the second inning, and then got 5 in the third to get back within 1, 8-7. Arapo added 1, golly, what was it, in the fourth maybe, for 9-7. And then, man, Cud just couldn't finish. His arm, you could tell it was kind of shaking it, you know what I mean, like throughout the night.
Yeah.
And he just – he couldn't – he went out to throw some warm-up pitches, and he just couldn't do it. And, you know, the guy – you know, the guys we were sitting there talking, you know, on our side were like, man, that stinks. That kid pitched way too good a player. That just – that really stinks for him not to be able to finish that. And, you know, he was clearly upset, and you get it, man, when you're that young. And those – you know, those kids know what winning that game – yesterday or last night meant today you get to play to go to the state tournament. And so it was a fortunate break, obviously, for our guys not to have to face him in the fifth. And they got it done, scored three runs and win. So, you know, credit to our guys continuing to battle. Even though you're down 8-0, it's easy to, as hot as it was, it's easy to kind of fold up the tent. But obviously there was some fortune that went our way with him not being able to finish the game. That kid is, man, he pitched just a little hard out. And
are there pitching limits a good player at this age?
Outs.
How
not
many
pitches,
outs?
But outs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's. We were discussing that, trying to figure out exactly. I think you get like 18 outs in a day or something like that. But then you can kind of waive that for one time for one kid in a tournament. So, but that was, you know, that's the fortunate thing about being able to scratch that one out. On our side, at least, is, you know, we didn't throw who you would call our ace yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you got him out more than, I mean, I'm not breaking any news here, I don't think, but I feel like you more than likely have him on the mound tonight to face Weatherford. And, you know, they've just played one game, so, you know, they're not running out of pitching yet by any stretch of the imagination either. So, you know, that ought to be a good one. So I think today you've got Woodward and Visai will play at 2:45, Merritt and Arapahoe at 4:30. Then I guess you got those winners at 6:15, and then Sarah and Weatherford today.
Merritt, Visai, B and A, Clinton, Visai.
Clinton, that's right.
2:45. Winner gets
Woodward.
Woodward.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about Clinton. That's right. Yeah. Clinton Visai.
I got the bracket right in front of me.
That's, I was
I'm
trying,
just piecing it together.
I was trying to remember, yeah, because I know that we would have played at 4:30 against Merritt.
If
a loss.
If they had lost, yeah.
That's right. So that would be Arapahoe. Arapahoe will play Merritt. Clinton Visai winner plays Woodward.
So win the day.
You're in.
You're
state.
In.
You're in state. You're in the finals. That's
get
right.
Get in. To the state.
Gotcha. Exactly right.
Gotcha. Yeah.
A win tonight. One either us or Weatherford's will be in the state tournament.
Cool.
The other one will have to win one game to get back to the finals. That'll be played early on Saturday morning. I think 11:00 on Saturday would be that game. But yeah. I mean,
I guess I'm secretly wanting a camera on so I can watch it.
It was fun. You know, it wasn't the most well played game, I wouldn't say. Both teams walked way more guys than they are used to,
mm-hmm.
or probably should have. You know, it just it was a little bit of a struggle, but it can't, you know, it really kind of came down to being able to you know, our catcher threw out a guy stealing second to end the fourth inning, rolled a 6-4-3 double play to end the fifth inning, you know, just to, it's even after 5-0, you're thinking, okay, you know, at some point you can scratch some run across, but you had to. If you were Sarah, you had to quit letting them score, or you know, somehow figure out a way to make it a doable thing.
Right.
And finally, Maddox Thompson came in, and he did a really, really good job of just throwing strikes. Sure, he gave up some hits here and there, but it wasn't one of those things where you know, it's one thing to give up a hit when there's nobody on and two out. You know, it's another thing to walk the bases loaded and then give up a hit.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And that's kind of what ended up happening is, yeah, they got that Arapahoe still got a couple of hits, but it wasn't in dangerous situations because he wasn't putting guys on like at first. So, you know, just one of those nights. It was a fun night. It was a close game, and I'm sure a lot of these games for the rest of this tournament are going to be just like that. I meant to pull this up. Okay, so that's what's happening in Weatherford. At Kingfisher, an 8U tournament up there starts today. I know the Elk City Fire Frogs are involved there. I believe they play at 5 p. Who do they play? Does anybody remember? Here, I'm pulling it up. I thought I had this off the top of my head.
A lot of kids from Canute play on that team.
So with Tonga.
I see a lot of posts about them.
Yeah, Thomas and Alva at 3:30. Elk City Fire Frogs and Watonga at 5. Perry and Cheyenne at 6:30. And then Kingfisher and Weatherford at 8 o'clock. That's AU and Kingfisher. I think we got the Altus Monkeys are in Vian. That's been a pretty good squad all year long. Altus will play at 8 o'clock tonight. They'll play the Vian Wolverines there. Let's see. Is that all the – I think that may be all the 8U. There is some 10U down in Elgin. Hobart, the Hobart Sluggers. That's been a team that has played really, really good the last couple of weeks. They will get the winner of Navajo and Anadarko. That's a 2:45 game. That game will be at 6:15 with those two, with the winner of that getting the Hobart Sluggers. Crushers and a bunch of other local teams in the 12U up in Woodward. Let's see. Cheyenne will play Clinton. Moreland will play Cheyenne at 3:30. Clinton plays Mangum, the Mangum Cubs, at 5. But I've seen that Mangum team, too. They have some arms. So Moreland, Cheyenne at 3:30. Winner plays the Elk City Crushers at 6:30. And then Mangum Cubs and Clinton Reds at 5. The winner there will play the Alva Renegades at 8. So that's 12U up in Woodward. Fun stuff. You know, it's a little bit different than what you guys do as far as the structure of it. You know, but the end of the season tournament is kind of like y'all's regional, right? In the leagues you play in, essentially.
Yeah, right.
It's kind of that. And so that's just there's a little different round, I guess you could call it, in the baseball, to where these teams have to go win their way into the state tournament through a regional as opposed to a league tournament.
But, and how many regionals are there?
Depends on which one. There's what? Seven. Seven there, seven there, seven there, seven. Seven in all of them. But the regionals have different amounts of teams.
Right.
It was a lot more regionally focused as far as the brackets this year than it is sometimes else. Just because, I mean, it even says on the website, due to high gas prices, we'll let you go wherever you want to. And I think pretty well everybody outside of maybe Altus decided they wanted to go as close as possible to home. You know, mm-hmm. So you see it more even most years as far as amount of teams in the regionals. This year, you know, some of them have seven and others have four. It's just a function of what's going on in life, yeah. I think, with the gas prices and whatnot, people not wanting to drive nearly as far.
It's understandable.
As no doubt about yeah. it. Did you check out any of the Chet Express last night?
I had it on. I had it on. By the time I got home, I had to run to the store, and you know, it started at 6, so by the time I finally escaped the store, I turned it on, and you know, it was just kind of background noise. You know, saw the, you know, it was exciting the first time. Second time, it's okay, it's summer league, gotta kind of keep telling myself that. But followed it loosely as I was helping out with dinner, and you know we'll talk about Giddy. He had a great game. Once I found the stats on Chet and I saw where he was at, I thought, okay, more down to earth. But it was stuff that after I really was really focusing on it, it was stuff that I was hoping that he would see at least a few times in this summer league, is physicality.
Yep.
Someone getting physical with him and how he responds to it. And I thought the response was fine. He had a double-double. And I think, you know, you see young guys who get challenged like that can get frustrated, try to force some things, and it turns into bad shots, et cetera. I think I saw from him make wise adjustments, you know, knowing like it does not have to go through me every time. I don't have to force stuff. And he got other guys involved. So, I mean, his basketball IQ, I think, is another thing that Sam Presti really liked when he, you know, had him number one on his board. So we saw a lot more of that, the basketball IQ, than what we saw the first time around, the actual ability. So it's stuff I like, but I think it was more of a down to earth, you know, okay, come back down to earth a little bit, kind of showing from him. So So I mean, overall, though, I mean, I was pleased with how he performed.
Yeah, it's when we talked about it yesterday. The way that he's going to be able to affect things, at least initially, is going to be defensively. Everybody got up and blown away by the offensive skill and 23 and knocking down 4 of 6 threes. That's going to be totally the cherry on top. Throughout, especially the first half of the season, as he gets settled in, right? I mean, it just is. It's going to be one of those things where, if you get a bunch of offense from Chet it's not going to be on a nightly basis, but here and there, that's going to be good. But the defensive end is where he's going to be able to affect things the most, at least initially. But you also see where he's going to have to get better, and that is, Kenny Lofton was half his size as far as height, but he was a big, strong dude, 275. And he's going to have to be able to, figure out a way to stand up to some of that. Early on, the first couple of possessions he got scored on, and, of course, that's all you see on the highlights. He kind of figured things out. And I referenced the game against Jalen Duren last year, a guy trying to bully him in the paint, and he held him to 3 of 11. So it's not like this is brand new territory for him, but it's going to be a lot higher skilled type of guy trying to bully him. Outside of just Kenny Lofton Jr. last night, when you actually get into the regular season and see an actual NBA players coming at you on a mm-hmm. nightly basis like he will. So it's something that he's going to have to figure out. I know the one thing, he won a 5 from 3, so now he's 5 of 11. Those numbers are going to kind of fluctuate like that, and he's clearly not a 67% three-point shooter for the season. He's also not a 20% three-point shooter for the season, so he's somewhere in between, and you hope it's closer to 40 than it is to 30, but it still doesn't take away from that skill set that he has, and that's going to be the challenge for him to be able to be and live up to the number one or the number two pick in the draft and kind of become a cornerstone of the franchise that most people are hoping he can be, at least around here for sure. Though you see the things that he's going to have to work on and played a better team, obviously, than that Utah team on the first night. And it kind of exposed some of the weaknesses that he has coming into the league. But everybody knew that was coming.
Yeah.
And so it's not a... And I put there, derailed the Chet Express. No. It's just something that, hey, here it is. Now, who's been awesome besides Josh Giddey?
Who would that be?
One of the other first-round picks, Jalen Williams.
Williams, okay.
So he's averaging 16.5, has made 13 of his 20 shots from the field. Oh, by the way, 4 for 4 from 3. And he is athletic and can defend. Pretty good there so far. So, that's probably lost in the shuffle a little bit of the Chet experience and Giddey kind of being what he is, and you start to see what he can become. Yes, he's going to have to be able to shoot the three better. There's no doubt about that. But what you don't realize about Giddey is how big that dude is.
Right. You see it when he's standing right next to Chet, clearly. But he's a big guy.
Yeah, he's like 6'8" or 6'9".
And what's crazy is
he can
doesn't
get in the lane and just shoot it over the guards every time he wants to.
But his handle isn't like a big guy handle. The way he brings it up to court, and we saw this past season how he can run the point if given the situation. And of course, his assists speak for themselves. So he has a great handle and a great vision too. But he does big guys. You typically don't. Aren't that sharp in those skills.
Yeah, a little bit more. It's like he gets lower to the ground than a bunch of the big guys. He doesn't just stand up.
Yeah.
He plays smaller with the ball in his hand, but he plays bigger when it's time to shoot, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
How much fun is it going to be to watch him, Dort, SGA, Chet, and Jalen Williams on the floor? It's not going to be all the time, but there's going to be times where those five are out there. Man, that's got the makings of a pretty good young core.
Yeah, and that's the idea. The young core, you nailed it right there. That's the whole idea, and hoping that they can, you know, gel and you know, bond, I guess. And that's quite apparent, too, between Giddey and Holmgren. Again, in the postgame interview, they're wanting to talk to Giddey. Holly Rowe was, and he's trying to pull Chet back in, just complete opposite of the other night. So, that, you know, it's the on-court stuff, we're going to see it. It's the off-court stuff I hope happens, which is the, you know, I guess the thing that sticks with me is the revelation from Perk about what the relationship was really like between Russ and KD. We always had that idea of what it was like, but it seemed like it was the entire team and then KD and his crew off the court. So, I mean, if they could have fun together and this young core right now, this young group, and grow together and become a real good team, which they potentially can be, it's, again, we're going to bring back that word, exciting.
Yeah, I mean, yesterday you saw a bunch of the Thunder on, like, SportsCenter because of Chet.
Yeah.
How long has it been since OKC has been in the national spotlight?
It's been a bit. I mean, they've always been in the conversation of, you know, maybe a three-team deal or something. And anytime there's a big trade or potential trade coming, you always kind of – everyone kind of looks at OKC. How are they going to get involved? Somehow they're going to get involved just to get more – you know, Sam Presti pulls the rabbit out of his hat and he'll get a couple more draft picks somehow.
Or be able to take on a contract because nobody else has any money.
Right.
That kind of stuff.
That's the most Oklahoma City has been paid attention to. Mm-hmm. But now it's about something that's happening on the court and the potential of something that could happen in Oklahoma City.
Play Philly, what, tomorrow, I think? And then after that, is it tonight?
There you go.
Bless you.
Oh, excuse me, I'm allergic to music, I guess.
And then in Vegas.
Yeah.
Night one, Rockets and Jabari Smith. Night two, Orlando and Paolo Banchero. It'll be fun. So, we've talked about a potential Baker Mayfield landing spot for a while now. Basically, even during the season last year when he got hurt, and for sure when he set himself down to get the torn labrum fixed with surgery, and at that point the conversation was on. What is Cleveland going to do? What is Baker going to – what are his options if Cleveland doesn't want him? And then – of course, the Deshaun Watson thing happened, and now here we are. And so yesterday, the Cleveland Browns decided to trade Baker Mayfield for a conditional. It's either going to be a fourth or a fifth round pick, depending on how much Baker plays this year in Carolina. So one of the two teams it had been rumored that Baker Mayfield would be going to this entire time maybe took longer than we thought. Maybe not. I mean, it just kind of – I don't think anybody really thought it was going to happen at the draft. It was going to have to be after the draft just because of the financial considerations that were always a part of this as far as who was paying his salary and the like. I think the pick was kind of established somewhere between third and fifth, but it was who's going to pay us, if you're Cleveland, who's going to pick up some of the salary or the most of this salary in order to ship Baker Mayfield out. And finally, yesterday, it turned out that team was the Carolina Panthers.
Which he's been connected to since day one.
Yeah, it's kind of been them or Seattle. Houston bowed out pretty early.
Right. It's interesting. It's interesting. I mean, from everything, from what division he's in, a potential quarterback battle in Carolina, the coach he's going to play for now, players he'll be playing with. You know, Charleston Rambo's on that team now. Did he play with Charleston Rambo?
Had to have.
Okay. I don't know if that was too far apart. But it's all interesting, very, very interesting for Baker, because I don't think, and I know this is a topic, I don't think the starting job is his immediately.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's natural to consider there to be a battle in
because
camp.
Carolina immediately came out and said, "We're not trading Darnold."
Yeah, I don't believe that.
Okay.
I mean, this isn't to the level of Lincoln Riley lying about Kyler Murray and Austin Kendall having a quarterback battle. It's not to that level. But if you were really sold on Sam Darnold, you wouldn't trade for Baker Mayfield.
Now,
I don't think that they're going to hand it to him on a silver platter. He's going to have to go in there. But if it's even remotely close, they're going to go with him. Because here's why. You know what else that Carolina did? They drafted Matt Corral in the third round this last year.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah. And so one would think he's kind of their quarterback of the future, but he's not ready yet. And, of course, they wouldn't mind winning some games with the guys they have on their team. And also, you mentioned the coach, Matt Rhule. This is kind of do or die for him.
Yeah, it is.
And so I don't think that Matt Rhule, with his job seemingly on the line, felt all that comfortable with going down swinging with Matt Corral or Sam Darnold. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Baker Mayfield was his first choice, but it's obviously a choice. And so with the history of what Baker's been able to do, kind of this is the bounce back year, right? It seems like it's kind of an every other year thing for the last couple,
yeah,
to where he really starts to play well. So I put it on. There will be some sort of battle, but I don't know how serious that the battle is going to be. So the deal is that pick, Cleveland pays $10.5 million of the $18.8 million. Carolina only had to pay $4.85 million, and then Baker actually gave up like $3.2 million, turned it into incentives more than guaranteed money on that contract. So he basically paid a little over $3 million to get himself out of Cleveland.
Man, that's how bad he wanted out of Cleveland.
That's how bad he wanted out of Cleveland.
Or it was, this is your only option, Baker. If you want out, you want to go a chance to go play somewhere, this is your only option. You're going to have to give up that money.
Probably something like that. And probably,
but he'll turn around and say, nah, I was more than willing to pay my way to get out of that town.
Both sides kind of have that,
right,
that leverage, I guess. Was he a success? Was he a failure? What is his time in Cleveland remembered as?
Well, I know everyone's expectation of a number one pick is winning at a high level in chances at championships. But based on what was before him, it's hard to say it wasn't a success based on Brown's quarterback history. You see what I'm saying? I mean, he won games, got in the playoffs, won a playoff game. I mean, almost knocked out Kansas City at one point. So I don't see why would we say it wasn't. I mean, I get it because he was the number one pick. Some would think, man, more wins should have come. But others would say, well, look at the quarterbacks before him. This was definitely an upgrade. So I'd lean on the side of it was a success when compared to the Browns' history.
Yeah, I just don't – I can't go there. When you draft a and it's weird because I think the answer is both, but not because of picking him number one. Like, I don't think there's any way you can say Baker Mayfield as the number one overall pick in his time in Cleveland is a success, because he's one of only three number one pick quarterbacks in the common draft era that dates all the way back to 1967, one of only three that made it 4 years or less with the team that drafted him. And the names that he's attached to there ain't pretty. Jamarcus Russell and Jeff George. So I individually for him, if you just want to look at it from a purely stats-driven perspective, he's led the league in interceptions since he came in. You know, there's those numbers. But I don't disagree with what you're saying, though. Team-wise, what he did for that franchise, and it wasn't just him, obviously, but he was the first quarterback to lead the Browns to a playoff win in 26 years. He inherited 1-31, and he went 32-32-1. And so there's a... He's not the biggest bust of all time at the number one pick, like, you know, Jamarcus Russell. I mean, he's nowhere near. He's going to be compared to that, I guess, because of that stat a little bit. And, but it's hard to say. It's hard to say he didn't turn that franchise around, because he took 1-31 2 years later to a playoff win. You know, so it's really like a. I mean, it's just Baker Mayfield in general, right? He's so polarizing. And even this discussion, depending on what side, you can take either side. He was a complete failure, or heck no, he was a success. And make your point, and make it pretty well. And it's the same dude. You know what I mean? That's,
yeah.
You don't see that very often.
No.
To where both sides can really make a case to be right. It's very interesting. It's very, very interesting. And a big part of it is just where he had to start from and how bad they had been. So
interesting topic, just stumbled across. You always see the articles of winners and losers of a trade. And I never thought of this angle. But a loser in this trade is Jimmy Garoppolo.
Because he's going to have to go to Cleveland? Is that why?
Because basically, I mean, Carolina, could they have gotten Jimmy Garoppolo for the same amount or less? It's, you know, and he's arguably kind of, I don't say a mirror image of Baker as far as production on the field, but maybe even better.
Let's see. He's been to a Super Bowl and a conference title game.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's the same way, though. He gets zero credit for any of the winning.
Right.
He gets all the credit for losing.
Right.
I mean, think about that Super Bowl. Nobody gave him any credit for getting there. And then they get down there to the end, and he doesn't make one throw, and it's like, oh, Jimmy Garoppolo lost us the Super Bowl.
Right.
I mean, and you can certainly see that happening to Mayfield.
So what I'm saying is that because of this trade, his value went down. It's going to be harder for him to find a home. But, yeah, he's probably going to be in Cleveland.
Yeah, that's where I'm afraid his stock went down, because now he's going to – going to have to go to, you know, Cleveland. It's such Cleveland, right?
Oh, Cleveland's going to Cleveland.
It really,
Browns,
it's just
going to Browns.
So they're going to be paying Baker Mayfield $10.5 million and will have paid Deshaun Watson the signing bonus. And then, of course, the way they structure the contract, it's not going to be a ton. And neither one of them are going to play for him all year long.
Yeah,
I mean, that is Cleveland. And you know what? A bunch of people said it when he was drafted. We got to give it up to our man Jim. He said he could not have went to a worse place because Cleveland is a ridiculous franchise. And he was proven to be true.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just so fascinating that a lot of the talk throughout the season, or as this became apparent, that this relationship was fractured. And then you start hearing the comments of, well, we need an adult at quarterback. And their answer to getting an adult at quarterback was to pay the largest guaranteed contract of all time for a guy that may never play again because he was a sexual abuser. A serial sexual abuser. Maybe not the adult you thought. But that's just that. There's a reason why Cleveland, Sacramento in basketball, why these franchises are mired in less than mediocrity, because they don't know what they're doing. And they make rash judgments and rash decisions to where they start mortgaging futures and the success of the team goes out the window because they're not either patient enough or they don't do their due diligence enough, whatever it might be, in all things probably wrapped up into one. It's why they can't have nice things. And it's why they're going to be these teams that have these long losing droughts of playoffless seasons. And it's hard to figure. I mean, if you're the Browns fan, how are you feeling today?
Probably no better than what you felt before the trade. if you're a Browns fan, you knew the writing was on the wall. Mayfield's not playing for us. He's gone. And now we got this other guy who may or may not play for us. That leaves us who? Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's – they're no better – they feel no different than what they have felt since this fiasco began, when it became very apparent that Mayfield was not going to wear a Brown uniform anymore. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I just –
I think
you slipped further into despair.
Yeah, some had this slight, very slim grip on hope that, well, I'm hoping that the commissioner comes out and says Watson is suspended for the year and the Browns do a 180 and go back and get Mayfield back. They mend the but we all knew that wasn't going to happen. And Browns fans, I think, knew that too. So there's, yeah, but they're just, man, here we are again. Browns being Browns. Get your paper bags out. Get ready to cut eye holes in them.
I know, and once again, though, like for them, I'm sure there's a bunch of them that are mad. Like, how did we do this to the first quarterback that led us to a playoff win in 26 years? And there's probably other ones going, okay, he wasn't good enough to get us to the promised land. We weren't going to win a Super Bowl with Baker Mayfield, so okay. You know, it's just really interesting because there are two totally different camps when it comes to him and when it comes to this, and both of them have merit. You just don't see that very often. I mean, there was nobody when Jamarcus Russell and the Raiders broke up. There was nobody on the Jamarcus Russell train going, oh, what are we doing? What are you guys doing?
Right.
Disrespecting Jamarcus Russell. Look at what he did for you.
Yeah.
You know, in almost every time when it comes down to this, there's really not a, you know, not Mitch Trubisky, like Jay Cutler was kind of like this, where he had some success, but he wasn't the ultimate guy. You know, he's one I could think of kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't type of guy. I mean, you know, there's not a ton of guys like this to where you're like, huh. I can see both of those sides.
Yeah.
If you want to trash him, trash him. If you want to say Cleveland's idiots, say Cleveland's idiots. You're both kind of right.
The first thing I did when the news broke was I looked up Carolina's schedule, of course.
Yeah.
Week one versus Cleveland. I mean, this Carolina schedule itself, I was just thinking, where's Hard Knocks going? Where's Hard Knocks going in the middle of the season, you know?
Right.
Yeah, Carolina would be the place to go. Because, of course, week one, Cleveland. You're going to see everything that we've seen Baker do, from grabbing himself in Kansas, from planting a flag at Ohio State, from everything. He's going to channel that and do it all at once versus Cleveland.
Don't you hope not, though?
Oh, you hope not, but it's Baker. And then the schedule itself is rough. At L.A. Rams, at the Bengals, you got the Broncos. If he wants any kind of motivation, maybe he's mad at Seattle because they didn't trade for him. It's at Seattle. I mean, the list goes on and on. Of course, Steelers are on the list, or on the schedule. Man, I need to get Sunday ticket just to watch Carolina every week.
You won't have to. It'll be on Channel 9. See you, Cowboys. Yeah, or it'll be on Fox now.
See you, Browns.
see you, Cowboys. yeah, that's the only thing better would be if that's in Cleveland. It's actually in Carolina. And then Russell Wilson plays the Seahawks too. Isn't that wild?
Oh, the Broncos are on the schedule too. But, yeah, I didn't notice that.
In week one, all in week one.
All in week one.
Yeah, Russell Wilson playing the Seahawks and crazy. Baker playing the Browns.
Do you think that they've already got the schedule released, times and channels and all that. Do you think that they'd wish – Man,
no.
I wish we had held back.
Good
we would
God,
love to
no.
put that game in prime time.
No, because it's Carolina versus Cleveland. Nobody cares.
Yeah, but nobody cares about that, but they care about the story. Baker Mayfield not near immediately as much as, going up against his first.
Who is the first Sunday night game?
It's
Dallas and
L.A.?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, guess what? They couldn't care less about your little Baker story. Let's watch the Cowboys and Rams. Well, it can't be the Rams. They play on Thursday.
It'll be the – oh, you're right. It'll
it's
be –
It's the Bills. Who is it? We looked.
I'm looking.
We called it. It may be Bills, Kansas City.
Yeah, we did call it. I'm pulling up the wrong schedule.
Tampa. It's Tampa. It's Cowboys Tampa.
Tampa, yeah.
It's Cowboys Tampa.
I was like, didn't we do that last year? Yeah.
Yeah, Cowboys Tampa.
That's the
it's the first Sunday night game. It's the
first Sunday night game.
Yeah, so see. Come on, man. I get it. It's a cool story. And it could be hidden in the 1 o'clock window.
Well, out of all the games at noon anyways, that might be the most watched.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Although Pittsburgh at Cincinnati could be good.
Ooh. Jim Steeler's starting out rough.
Yep.
Right there at first. We're going to finish the show.
What do we got?
All right, coming up this weekend. Actually, tomorrow. It all starts tomorrow, Jared.
This week has flown by.
Hasn't it? It probably helped that we didn't have a Monday.
That's true.
With 4th of July. But it's the 25th annual KECO Moran Equipment Open. Golf tournament on Saturday, but that's not all. There's a horse race on Friday night.
Now, some Friday might afternoon. Ask you, they're going to go, wait a minute, you're talking golf. Now horses are involved?
That ain't right, is it? Okay. 4 o'clock horse race?
Yeah.
Okay. 4 o'clock horse race. Be there by 4 for sure. If you want to enter that, that's championship flight golfers only. Blake at KECOFM.com is how you do that. I'm sure that field is getting close to set. Probably 20 again like we did last year. Two separate sides of the golf course. 10 go this way, 10 go that way. Eliminate down to, like 6 guys, I think, on number 3 from each. 3 from each side end up on number 15.
Okay.
And then you get everybody together on 15 and finish off the last 4 holes. After that, down on number three tee, where the old clubhouse was. That's where we're going to have our party, our dinner. Dinner and players party down there after that. 8-ish sometime. You know, it normally takes about that long to play the horse race. So come on out. It'll be fun. It'll be a lot of fun. Watch some really good golf there on Friday night. Then Saturday, 7:30 tee time for the ABC flight guys. All in the morning. All ABC flight is all in the morning. Then in the afternoon, start registering at 7. Even before that if you want to. Really and truly, because we'll be out there earlier than that. Registration begins in the afternoon around noon for the 1:30 tee times. We've got ABC flighters and also championship flighters as well. So that's the schedule of events for the 25th annual KECO Moran Equipment Open Golf Tournament. We'll have the horse race, last 4 holes, live, video streamed. We're shooting that to the KECO Facebook page.
Yeah, it's easier.
Figured that's where we would go with that. And then, of course, we'll have the scoreboard all day. Same spot.
Yep.
Same bat time, same bat channel for the championship flighters. We'll have a up-to-date scoreboard throughout the afternoon there, the championship flight as well, on the KECO Facebook page. You can check all that out right there. All right, so all Big 12 teams. Do you know who had the most players selected to the first team all Big 12? What team had the most?
Baylor.
It was not Baylor. Baylor was second with 5. This team had 6.
Kansas State.
2 offense, 3 defense, and 1 special teams. Baylor had 3 offensive guys and 2 defensive guys. After that, coming in third place all by themselves.
Texas.
Nope.
OSU.
Nope.
Yeah, I don't know. Iowa State,
okay. The team that everybody thinks lost all their guys.
Well, can I go back and give up myself about Kansas State? I know it's preseason, but
we both talked about Kansas State being the team.
Their team that
everybody thinks there's 4, OU, OSU, Baylor, and Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Who's that next guy? Kansas State's a team that people are liking. Interesting, the one team, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. There's only one team that had nobody.
Kansas?
No.
Kansas got someone on here.
Kansas has somebody on the offense and the defense, which Oklahoma doesn't. But there's one team that has nobody, period.
There's nobody on this list. I don't know.
Texas Tech.
Oh, yeah.
Texas Tech is an ofer. Kansas had as many as OU. They had a defender. OU had the punter. Now, how long has it been since that's been the case?
A punter?
Or OU haven't. It's almost like, doesn't that feel like the kind of pat your head? Here you go. Here you go, little boy. You can have one, and it can be the punter. Doesn't that feel like a Baylor move back in the mid-90s when they couldn't win a game? You know, we don't have to put somebody on from every school on these teams, but what if we give the Baylor punter that award?
Yeah, kind of.
Doesn't it kind of feel like that?
Yeah.
So here's the question. If, you know, and I know OU fans are up in arms over this, but who do you put on there?
Well, you mentioned Mims at the top of the show. He would be probably one of the best candidates. You know, Stutzman, I think, has maybe got some consideration as a preseason guy because you saw some potential from him when he was healthy. Ethan Downs even maybe could have got some consideration. But I just think right now those are young guys that eventually will make this list and, shoot, might even make the list at the end of the year. But there's just so much uncertainty around OU right now with the new coaching staff, an exodus of players, a mass amount of players coming in, whether it be the portal or young guys being recruited in. It's just one of those transition periods where there's more sure things, more stuff, more of a product we've seen on the field from these guys that you're gonna recognize a lot of these names. Spencer Sanders, Deuce Vaughn, Robinson. Those are all names that we know what they can do. So it's hard to know who to put on there for OU. I think Mims is the number one answer because we know what he could do as of like 2 years ago, but last year his production was down. Probably didn't help. He had to work with two different quarterbacks and try to build rapport with one or the other. But that'd be my answer. That's the only guy I can think of.
Yeah, see, I would go with Woody Washington.
Okay.
In 10 starts, he's got 4 picks. That's almost a pick every other game. The guys that are on that list aren't doing that. But it's only 10 starts.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's any problem with what's happened because, quite frankly, you lose all those guys in the portal, plus you lose 11 guys to the draft. You're going to be a little bit void of superstar talent or star talent. Maybe not even superstar talent, just stars. Just the nature of the beast, especially when – you know, you think about who left. I mean, Williams would have been probably the easy choice as the Big 12 quarterback. Mario Williams, you know, he probably gets a little bit more of the benefit of the doubt than Mims in some ways because of his flashiness, you know, and his star ranking in recruiting versus Mims. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. That's – but really and truly, OU doesn't really have guys coming back that have proven worthy of all Big 12 consideration on the college football field yet. Now, I think that's liable to change once you start looking at the postseason. And I think the most fascinating question about this list is Spencer Sanders is the preseason all Big 12 first team quarterback. And I think rightfully so preseason, because when you look at what everybody else lost, he's the obvious choice coming back. Here's the question. Will he be the postseason All-Big 12 quarterback?
There's a lot of other candidates that can knock him off that list. If he's Spencer Sanders versus Notre Dame versus, well, OU.
Second half OU.
Second half OU, yeah.
He almost threw the season away. Let's not kid ourselves.
But we know what we're talking about. If he's the guy that can protect a football, make better decisions, smart decisions, which he did more of last year than not, then I can see him being right there at the top. But, you know, we got Dylan Gabriel as a preseason newcomer of the year. With him and Lebby, what's that production going to look like? Ewers down in Texas.
I mean, you know people are wanting so bad.
Yeah. Are you shocked he wasn't put in the preseason newcomer?
A little bit. But I think how do you classify him? Is he still a freshman? I mean, I guess he redshirted, right, at Ohio State. So he transferred in. I don't know if he's eligible. That's what I'm trying to think of. If he should have, like, if he's just for freshman of the year because he's a redshirt freshman and right. Can't be, yeah. Even though he transferred in. You know, I don't know how those, but yes, I am. But also, I mean, Gabriel, it's the same thing with these OU guys. I mean, for yours, you can't, it would have almost been hypocritical for these same guys to vote Ewers as the newcomer of the year when he's done nothing, literally, versus Gabriel, who has a track record of some production.
Yeah, there's a sample there that we've seen
Lebby. That's right.
So it's something that the voters saw going, you know what, that could be very productive.
I think that's they at least stayed down the same paths in the way they voted.
Yeah.
I'll say this, if Sanders is the postseason winner, you got to feel good about Oklahoma State's chances of being in that Big 12 title game.
I'd go one further. You got to really like their chances of being in a playoff.
Being the Big 12 champ and having a chance to be in that playoff?
Yes. If he's the best quarterback in this league, absolutely.
But
the sad thing is he can be the best quarterback in this league, but there might be defensive liabilities like you've mentioned.
Yeah, but what I think, if he is the winner, then maybe he can cover up some of those defensive things, whereas in the past he wasn't able to.
Well, I know that, but what I'm getting at is we've seen a lot in Norman is, a 42-38 final.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, the quarterback looked great, but the defense lost the game for you. Does that make sense? What I'm getting at.
If we're talking about
he could be the best quarterback, but I'm not saying OSU's defense is going to be that bad. I'm not saying that. But there are some question marks on that side of the ball that could overshadow what's happening on the offensive side.
In the context of making the playoff, sure. In the context of winning the Big 12, I don't think so. If he plays that good, it's hard to see them losing enough games not to at least be in that game,
mm-hmm.
which then puts him in a good spot. Adrian Martinez would be a guy that I think that could possibly be mentioned too. If K-State is that team, that would be a natural place to look for a guy that came in as the newcomer of the year. It's kind of, he's probably another guy that got some votes for that.
Mm-hmm.
With the team around him, K-State has the success. He'd be kind of a natural guy to vote for that one as well.
Yeah.
I have no problem with Bijan Robinson being the offensive player of the year with what he's shown. You know, I think it's – with what anybody's shown, I think it's either – you either have to vote for him or Sanders, one of the two.
Yeah.
With what's coming back.
Yep.
I'm ready to see how they rank them. Who do you think will be the media's pick to be the Big 12 champ?
OSU.
I think probably so too. But I could see it being OU or Texas also.
Yep.
All right, everybody have a great Thursday.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered over.